Meeting of the Atlantic Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA. And since the most important aspect of AA, recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons have the list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Victoria will read the preamble.
Hi, I'm Victoria. I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Please join in the serenity prayer. God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Duncan will read the steps.
Hello, my name is Duncan and I'm an alcoholic. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Elizabeth will read the traditions.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth. I'm an alcoholic. And the 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for a group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you. The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker, who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is George.
Hi, everyone. My name is George. I am an alcoholic. Wow. Great to be here. What an amazing... I never came over here this early. I came over at 6, and it was just such an amazing vibe in this hall, and to see all the little satellite groups and going on. All I wanted to do was just sit down with a little group and, you know, read from the book, as most people were doing. God willing, you know, July 2nd, I'll have 17 years of sobriety. And, you know, for the new person in here tonight, that took a lot of hard work. It took going to meetings daily. I got sober on Staten Island. Groups like the KISS group, Keep It Simple, Stupid, the Goya group, Get Off Your Blank, at the South Beach Psychiatric Center, you know, all places that, sitting on the bar stool for my entire adolescence in my 20s, I could never, you know, I mean, I was afraid to go to places like the South Beach Psychiatric Center. I mean, I wouldn't even drink nearby it, but that's where I spent my Friday nights, you know, and Saturday mornings, and in church basements all over Staten Island. So that's where I got sober. It's a great place to get sober. I'm a son of ACOA through and through. My dad was a heavy hitter in New York City Fire, and he drank a case of Schaefer a day and went to work. That's what he did. And so I learned that I wanted to be just like him. You know, you have a New York City fireman as a dad, you have a built-in hero, and I wanted to be just like him, so I did everything just like him. So as soon as possible, I wanted to drink. And I started with sipping his suds of Schaefer and Rheingold and Schmitz and whatever was on sale, that's what we drank, and at the local distributor. And so, you know, by 13, 14, I was drinking regularly, weekend drinking with the guys, the kids in the schoolyard, and keg parties in the woods and all that kind of stuff. And it turned my dad's drinking into an art form. You know, by 15, 16, I'm completely alcoholic and addicted and in trouble and always at the wrong place at the wrong time, always getting arrested, always getting picked up, always walking home in the middle of the night drunk and high as a, you know, 15, 16 year old just shouldn't be. But that's the way it was for me. I was alcoholic through and through. I had no, my first psychiatrist said to me, don't worry about it. You had no shot. You had no choice growing up. You know, where you grew up, you had no shot. Just sit down and cooperate with us and you'll be okay. So by the end of June 91, this time of year always brings me back there. It was just, you know, hiding out and, you know, getting high and drinking around the clock. And it was really, really dark. You know, it was really dark. And I always had a loving family. So wherever I was hiding at, I'd always hear my sisters driving around yelling my name. And I'd be hiding under someone's bed or in someone's closet and with, you know, blinds pulled down. And that's my alcoholism really, really had me. I was incapacitated when I drank and when I got high. And and I thought I liked it. I thought I liked it. I remember telling my first therapist how much I loved doing the things I was doing, you know, and he'd say, how could you like smoking cocaine? How could you do that? And it's like pouring gasoline on your head and igniting it. How could you possibly say you like that? And I enjoyed the feeling. I enjoyed getting loaded. And So July 2nd, 91, by the grace of God, I was able to stop. And I never looked back. You know, I've heard in many rooms over the years, you know, you could look in the rearview mirror, just don't stare. And I've looked back many a times over my life and where it was and what happened, and maybe things could have been different. Could have been a better student if I wasn't getting high all the time and drinking through high school and college. I could have went to better schools. I could have got better jobs. I could have made better choices. But I had no choice. And on July 2nd, 1991, I was given a choice. And I went to wasn't my first AA meeting, but it only took me 3 months. I started going to meetings in March of 91, and July 2nd, 91, I got it. And for good, for today. And you know, it's been an amazing ride. It's been an amazing run. I've always gone to meetings. I've always done service. My sponsor was Scott R., who I love and miss dearly and deeply. One of the most intimate relationships I've ever had in my life. He's an extraordinary member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I remember the last time he spoke here a couple of years ago. But, you know, he'd always say to me after, you know, every inventory I read to him, he'd always say to me, he'd often say to me, I just ask one thing of you, George. I'd say, what, Scott? And he'd say, just pass this on to a new guy. That's all I ask. And it also often say that didn't have to do anything, but that he had to do what he was doing to stay alive. And I always knew it then. And he said, George, you don't have to do anything, but I need to do this and take these calls from you to stay alive. And he understood, as most of us do, the power of alcoholism. And I understood that before I met Scott, but it really got, you know, hit home when talking to Scott on a regular basis for the last 7 years. So, I've always done service. I've always been sponsored. You know, I've always had that sense, like Earl says, you know, Earl H., that I have no business walking this earth unattended. I always love that. And, you know, I've always been afraid not to be sponsored and not to be checking in with somebody to tell them what's going on with George. What am I really up to? As Scott used to say, if you're new, we, you know, pull one of us over after meeting and tell us your plan. We want to know your plan. And, you know, early on, I still have plans today, alcoholic plans, but early on I had plans too. And I'm always glad I shared most of them, not all of them, but I shared most of them. And I've been able to stay out of trouble for the most part in sobriety. I've never gotten arrested in my 17 years. I don't think I've even spoken to a New York City policeman in 17 years when that used to be a regular occurrence, you know, escorted from Shea Stadium or, you know, pulled over on the side of, you know, Highland Boulevard and Staten Island, loaded. And, I've never gotten into any jackpots since I've gotten sober. So I am deeply indebted to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm just extraordinarily grateful that I got sober in AA and I stuck. You know, I stayed here and I continue to stay here, and I want to continue so my good friend Eddie said before the meeting, I thought was just a wonderful thing. He said, "Let the healing begin, George." It's been a very, very difficult year for many of us in here, or that knew and loved Scott and that worked with Scott and had relationships with Scott. It's been a very difficult year. And Eddie told me before the meeting, "Let the healing begin," and I love that. So thanks.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Cassandra.
Hi, I'm Cassandra. I'm an alcoholic. Chugging water. Had the, you know, privilege of doing talking through some amends with my sponsor before I got up here, and you know, and she just reminded me that, like, I have a purpose up here, and it's not to, you know, sound good. It's just to, you know, help the newcomer, as, like, you know, I have a lot of fear of, you know, just looking good, sounding good, and I think nothing kind of counters that fear than, like, purpose. People have told me faith is the opposite, but, like, faith gets confusing for me sometimes. But just that purpose of talking to other people and seeing what I can, like, bring to a situation as opposed to what I can get out of it. So I'm an alcoholic, and I think that fear that I have right now is is something that it's very, I don't know why I'm not used to it. I've had it since I was very young, and a lot of it I had, you know, just, I remember walking into a my first day of preschool and just, like, looking out at these kids, and I just was like, you know, she's blonde and he's smart. I think his dad's a doctor, and just like that. I think that was kind of me just in that, you know, my first day of kind of terminal uniqueness. You know, I started kind of building my case against how I wasn't like the rest of the world. And I really, really thought it was real. You know, I really had thought it was real at a very young age. But, the thing that was real was that I was just so scared. I was so scared of people. And I just ran to the teacher and I started doing math problems and, like, becoming a teacher's pet, you know? And so when I first came and started to, like, do the steps with my sponsor, I started to hear, you know, in meetings that, you know, we were born with this disease. That was one of the memories that stuck out for me, that I was born with a lot of fear, and that's kind of how I process my life. And, when I picked up drinking, at, like, 13, and it was the first time that, you know, I didn't have that, like, you know, suffocating fear. And it was the first time that I remember I was totally self-seeking. There was, like, this group of, like, punk rock. I was, like, really nerdy and, like, had a unibrow, and I was just, like, really, like, awkward. And there was this girl with, like, a, you know, and she was, like, I think she listened to, like, Black Flag, and I was like, oh, cool, she's, like, talking to me, and, like, and I was like, okay, and you know, and she was just like, you know, I'm gonna go to this party, and, you know, and I wasn't talking, and then everybody was like, you know, what are you getting? And you know, I was like, you know, everybody was like, Mad Dog, Mad Dog, Mad Dog, and I was like, I'm getting Mad Dog. And then and so I got it, and you know, when I got it, I didn't know what I had drank before, but I never was, you know, drunk. You know, I was around the stuff a lot growing up, but when I drank it, I was just like, I drank it. First of all, I drank it fast, and second of all, like, I got, like, a round of applause. I was like, yes. I was like, you know, because I think they just saw this, like, nerdy kid that was just, like, that just slammed it, and I joke around, like, I felt kind of like, it was what I was always looking for, something that I was just good at that I didn't even have to work at, you know? And I felt kind of like a genius of drinking, and I was definitely that. And, you know, and that story, when I first read Bill's story, just that, you know, you hear it a lot, but that I had arrived, I really had that. And I, you know, pursued that, for the rest of my drinking career. And, career, whatever that was, I pursued, like, that feeling of, you know, just, I just kind of wanted a round of applause for, you know, just being who I was, and actually not really looking or listening to people. Bless you. And you know, I think, in retrospect, you get sober and you realize that there's things. You get sober and basically you start to realize about your bottom, like, a lot, like, and you start to realize things. I start to remember things that I didn't remember. And I remembered that, like, my life got really unmanageable very fast. And, you know, by the time I was, like, 15, I was kicked out of school. 16, I was living with my mom. I got sober at the age of 26, so it was 13 years of this. And it was a lot of control and then going for it, and control and then like going for it again. And so quitting, you know, there was a lot of that. And I thought that was the proof of why I wasn't an alcoholic. And I realized when I walked into my first meeting and heard other people talking that, it was kind of like I knew the medicine worked, but I wasn't quite ready to admit that I was an alcoholic. I was pretty sure you were, but I wasn't sure I was. But there was that mustard seed of identification that I heard myself being articulated back to myself much better than I ever was able to. And, I kind of kept coming back, and I didn't understand why. And then, I just started to hurt really bad. And about 8 months in of not drinking, I basically decided that I was either going to kill myself or I was going to have to, pick up a drink again. And that's kind of how it comes, that's kind of how I approach my, sobriety today. Like, I have to do the work or I may not pick up a drink, but I'm not going to be, in public. I'm going to be alone in my apartment. You know, I was sober, for a year, or off and on again for a year in college, and that was my proof for so long that I was that I wasn't an alcoholic. But I was alone, and I was not talking to people, and I was too scared to even look at you in the eye. And so when I realized that I did have this this thing, and I started doing the steps with my sponsor, and I realized, and that's that kind of second step proposition, you have to find a power greater than yourself, or you will pick up that drink, or you'll pick up the fear, or you'll just pick up the complete unmanageability. And, and that was the biggest thing for me, was that I had to find a higher power. I had to find something that was bigger than that feeling that I had, that fear that I had when I walked up to another individual, when I walked up to another human being and I was just like, I'm scared of you, And so I got really into my life, I got really into my prejudices and turned them over and kind of turned them into something that's bigger than myself. And, the reasons that I thought I was unfixable, those are the things that I'm so fixable today. When I said that I'm confused about faith, I'm confused about a lot of things, but a lot of people have told me that the steps kind of work in spite of yourself, and I get that, because I can talk to people today. I don't think I ever was able to really listen to another human being ever. And I realized that, I could hear people better, not just in AA meetings, but people who, people at my job, people who I was pretty sure that I was better than or worse than, and actually stopping and looking people in the eye. And that's been something that I don't really understand how that is exactly my faith, but that's kind of how it's worked for me so far. And I guess just to say to the newcomer, you can have tons of evidence. I've had tons of evidence as to why I thought I, wasn't an alcoholic and that this wasn't going to work for me. And I'm the hesitant, defiance, dogs my, every step. And somebody reminded me that defiance isn't as blatant as it maybe once was, but defiance for me a lot of times is just keeping things within. And if I'm just willing to talk to somebody, to turn it over to something that's greater than myself, it started out as my sponsor, now is my a God that I'm very close to, that's going to keep me coming back, and that's my medicine to keep me from, that first drink. So thank you.